safe working environment for our teams and to prepare for the return of our cruise guests. However, I will talk about these measures at the end when we actually consider the outlook. Right now, I want to hand it over to Jan, who is going to run through the financial performance of our business in more detail. Jan?
Thank you. Thank you, Emre. And welcome, everybody. Thank you very much for joining. I would like to start my part of the presentation with a personal note. As announced, I will take over the CFO position. And I would like to first thank the board of directors for the trust. And I would also like to thank Ferda, GPH's longtime CFO, also on behalf of the whole team, very much. I'm taking over a well-run finance organization, which has proven its capabilities, not only, but particularly during this crisis times, and which has put a lot of stress, not just on the balance sheet and income statement, but also on GPH employee across the board. And you know, I'm joining a great team. Let me take you through the financial performance of this half year. And I think it goes without saying, I would have been more pleasant to present the usual growth numbers, positive growth numbers GPH typically reports. But as it was said before, GPH has been impacted negatively by COVID-19 for sure. However, we all believe this crisis has also revealed the unique strength of GPH's business model. Strengths we may not have wanted to be tested, but I think diversification in multiple dimensions, geographically and in terms of business units, as well as flexibility and resilience, are key features of GPH business model. And I will highlight where appropriate these during the financial part of the presentation. You see the screens in front of you, the segmental performance, our usual presentation, with I think first and foremost a 60% decline in EBITDA is seen, which is obviously substantial. But I would argue that even though a business which on the cruise side has come virtually to a standstill, the second quarter EBITDA was still positive, which, given the focus of the group, is very, I think, a substantial achievement. So after reporting about $10 million of adjusted EBITDA, this half year's EBITDA has further increased to $13.5 million EBITDA. Revenues, and we still generate positive margins. Obviously, that's thanks to the diversification of the business, with a commercial business which operates stable compared quarter over quarter, and a cruise business which no doubt has benefited from a very strong first quarter in our Caribbean business, but has since been negatively impacted. You will also note on the presentation a new item in our 2020 financials, which is the IFRIC 12 cruise revenue. And let me jump to the next page to explain this in more detail, because it appears very surprising, to say the least, that you see a business like GPH operating on stable revenues with no change, about 54 million revenues compared to the same period last year. IFRIC 12 is an application which relates to the construction activity in Nassau, in our Nassau cruise port. As it was reported before, and as you know, construction activity have started in the second quarter. And you may ask why Nassau is reported differently than other businesses. In our point of view, commercially, this concession is similar to the one in Antigua and other concessions we operate. And I think I'm not alone in saying that IFRIC 12 is not a particular adequate standard for a business like GPH. I think even our auditors would agree to this. So what happens is that the construction revenue, the construction activity, is accounted for in revenue, a standard IFRIC 12, which typically applies to SPVs running BOT PPP projects, not the type of holistic cruise port operator like GPH. But the classification of IFRIC 12 is very determined, and we have to accordingly apply the standard. So to repeat, we account for the construction activities in Nassau as revenues, about $22 million, with a margin of 2%. So you find almost no 400,000 EBITDA impact and a significant 22 million revenue accounted for in Nassau. And as the construction has just started, you will continue to see this impact throughout the remainder of the construction period. When we talk about performance in the coming slides, and I would advise everybody to do the same, we will exclude the IFRIC 12 impact because that, in our view, continues to be a CapEx as it should be. So numbers adjusted for this will be presented in the coming slides. Revenue, starting with revenue, bridge to the 2019 financials. And how the revenue across the two business units has changed. Martin, if you could move to the next slide, please. Thank you. So from a 54.6 million revenue, we have to really illustrate what has happened during the half year period. We have broken it down into not just cruise and commercial, but also within cruise, which are the two light blue bars to the left. The new cruise ports, consolidated cruise ports, Nassau and Antigua, have contributed 7.9 million of additional revenue compared to the same period last year, which most of it, nearly all of it, generated in the first quarter, which in the Caribbean is the strongest, is the main season, as opposed to the Mediterranean, which had little to no activity in the first quarter. On a like-for-like basis, the lighter blue bar to the right, that represents the portfolio similar to 2019. And on a revenue reported last year of 23.9 million, almost 20 million decline has to be reported because of the previously mentioned suspension of cruise activity. So the first half revenue is only 4 million on that part of the business. We will see moving to the commercial side. Also, the commercial side has clearly not been immune to the global uncertainty, but and that is I think the important way we look at this. If you compare the quarter to quarter performance, Q1 to Q2, you will see that both quarters report almost identical stable numbers of around 10 million revenue. And it needs to be further taken into account that last year, last half year 2019, we had a special contract, an oil service contract generating substantial revenues. So that has not been continued this year, distorting the comparison. So accounting for that, a 33% drop in commercial revenues would be effectively representing only a 20% decline. But as I said, I think the key message here would be that our commercial performance, albeit below last year, is stable and has not been further impacted by the COVID implied uncertainties around the globe in the second quarter. All of this adding up to 32.2 million revenue in the first half year 2020. Again, the reminder, the reconciliation to the reported revenues of 54.2 would be the IFRIC 12 construction revenue in Nassau. On EBITDA, similar breakdown. Conceptually, with respect to first breaking down the cruise activities into the new business and predominantly or exclusively Nassau and in Antigua, with a positive EBITDA, which you know you will have seen this in the first quarter numbers. Most of this EBITDA, actually a higher number, was generated in the first quarter, the main season. Caribbeans as well as Mediterranean ports alike have not generated any meaningful business in the second quarter 2020, hence on a like-for-like basis, a substantial EBITDA decline. But again, I was talking about resilience and flexibility of the business model. The second quarter is a proof, or second quarter in the cruise activity is proof of that. We had generated across the portfolio about a 1,900,000 revenues only, which was mostly what we call ancillary revenues, retail operations, and have closed the quarter with an EBITDA loss of just about 2 million only. So the cash burn the losses in cash because of the flexible business model, because of the use of subcontractors, because of the high EBITDA margin to start with in normal times, is really minimal. And we are down to over the last quarter already, costs have been further reduced to fixed cost with no activity of about 3 million per quarter. So about 1 million per month. And we have two measures taken across the quarter, not fully reflective in this quarter's performance, reduced the monthly cash burn further to well below 1 million a month. On the commercial side, I think we explained most of the drivers already with the previous revenue decline that was translated almost fully in EBITDA. But again, looking not only from the revenue side, what I said there applies equally to the EBITDA side. Both quarters have reported same earnings of about 6 million EBITDA in both. Central cost, Amber has explained the measures taken have already been reduced by about a quarter compared to the same period last year during Q2, which is only a portion of the real savings made, right? The saving measures were implemented across the quarter. The full effect, financial effect of those will only be applicable in the third and upcoming quarters to come because of accruals. So we focused on liquidity, but as per IFRS, certain cost items had still to be accrued, but they did not lead to a cash outflow. And I'll come back to this. And other measures have just been taken throughout the quarter. Again, full impact of the same will be visible in the quarters to come. Then moving on to the next slide for items below EBITDA, I think the two main highlights I would like to make on this slide and then dive into the details in the upcoming pages. Operating cash flow. Focus on liquidity has been clearly shown in our operating cash flow, which exceeds EBITDA generation, despite below EBITDA costs, certain project expenses, mostly in the first quarter, which have been reduced and stopped since. And despite those further outflows below EBITDA, the operational cash flow has actually outperformed EBITDA generation because of a stringent approach and collection of revenues, because of deferrals of certain revenues and overall a tight cost management. So positive cash flows and of course the continued operation of the commercial ports. And we'll break down the CapEx, which predominantly was invested in Nassau and Antigua further in the upcoming slides. Martin, if we please move on to, as I said, cash flow. So we talked about the cash generating from operating activities. So 8.8 million working capital, positive working capital impact, mostly through the, as I said, collection of receivables, reduction of some of it is automatic, obviously, if no revenue is generated, collection of receivables happens. But we nevertheless also have at this point of time substantially no risk from outstanding payables vis-a-vis our cruise partners. And we have also, as I said, deferrals have increased the cash collection and the liquidity preservation. So that 16.6 overall operating cash flow was generated. Interest expense increased in line with the increased debt. We'll come to that in a second. And I want to talk about the CapEx projects. 38 million was spent in Nassau and Antigua, most of it 29 in Nassau. Both CapEx projects, not just the funding for the first half, but also the upcoming funding for every committed CapEx is fully financed. I can only agree with Amber and the rest of the team that the Nassau bond is a great success and great testament of the strength of the business and the ability to raise financing in the most challenging time. That finances all committed CapEx of Nassau, and we have a committed bank line by regional lenders for Antigua, financing not just the CapEx to date, but all committed CapEx of the new pier extension in Antigua. So these projects will continue. It's important for us that they continue, and we will continue to complete these projects on schedule. The last slide of my presentation would be the debt overview. which is a gross debt of about $560 million, increased compared to the last reporting date, December, because of the predominantly because of the issue of the Nassau bond, which is a non-recourse bond issued by Nassau Cruise Port SPV, and some increases in the Antigua facility committed drawdowns we have taken over the over this quarter and continue to have. So you also see, because of this bond being issued fully upfront, you see also significantly increased cash levels of 122 million in the group consolidated level, but overall an increase in the net debt due to the effects I was mentioning earlier. Net debt to EBITDA ratios are given on the slide. Of course, the decline in EBITDA puts substantial pressure on those ratios. But as Emre has said, all financial obligations will have been met and will continue to be met with existing resources of the group. The last slide of the presentation I would leave for later reference, and we can come back during the Q&A, reconciling some of the key figures I mentioned to IFRS to IFRS reported values. Thank you very much, and back to you, Emre.
Thank you, Jan. Let's focus on the second half of the year. Our resolve in the second half is to keep the health and safety of all of our stakeholders and enable a smooth start. In fact, today, GPH will welcome back its first international cruise call at a port since the lockdown started. The MSC Grandiosa should have entered the port in Malta, in Valletta. And that's an important milestone for us. To get us to this point, a lot of work has gone into planning and preparing for the safe return of cruise ships to our ports. Across the business, we worked with relevant partners, health authorities, to implement and facilitate a range of new measures. These include pre-embarkation tests for passengers, temperature checks, designated quarantine areas in our terminal buildings. We have also put in place enhanced hygiene and cleaning regimes in all of our ports, and sanitization, and of course, PPE for passengers, crew, and our people. For this call, we will also pre-test everyone who will come into contact with cruise guests in our ports. So this way, there will be a controlled environment, which is better than any other form of traveling in my mind. It is pleasing and supportive of our team's efforts that our work has already received external validation. The World Travel and Tourism Council recently endorsed the measures taken in a number of our ports, providing a safe travel stamp for Antigua, Barcelona, Bodrum, Egeport, Malaga, Valletta, and Zadar, I believe, and others will follow shortly. With health and safety measures in place and cruise ships starting to return to our ports, we can now turn our attention to the outlook for the business over the remainder of the year and beyond. For our commercial ports, the key word is resilience, as Jan mentioned. The performance year to date has been resilient in terms of the macro conditions and the crises. And we expect this resilience to continue into the second half, albeit on an improving trend. While in terms of our cruise port business, it has been encouraging to hear the major cruise lines recently talking so positively about the booking trends for 2021. These have been reported as being strong across all core destinations in the Caribbean, in Europe, and North America, with bookings running at levels seen in previous years, despite the COVID-19 crisis, and despite almost zero marketing by cruise lines. There is even some optimism being expressed that these trends could accelerate. Looking beyond 2021, most cruise lines have maintained strong cruise ship order books. Of course, there are some deliveries pushed out a year or so, and some older ships being retired slightly earlier than planned. In fact, three of these ships are being taken apart right now in Turkey. But when you look at the overall order book, and when you look at the new ships arriving even this year, the overall capacity of the industry is still increasing. While there are reasons for some early optimism, we do remain cautious, as our chairman stated. This crisis is not over, and there remains considerable uncertainty and risk from COVID-19, and we continue to be cautious on the speed of the recovery of in cruise. What we are confident about is the ability of our company to weather the storm and emerge from this crisis to fulfill our longer term growth ambitions. We are a company that looks into the future in terms of 10 years, 20 years, sometimes, as in the case of Valletta, 60 years. So we believe that that part of our business will be back, and it will come back strongly. On that note, I will hand back to Martin, and we will open up to the Q&A session. Thank you.
Thanks, Emre. If I could just ask you all now to use the raise your hand functionality in Zoom to indicate you wish to ask a question, and then we will ask you to unmute your line and go ahead. If for any reason you can't get the raise your hand functionality to work, then please email me or give me a call afterwards and we'll come back to you as soon as we can. I'll now give everybody 30 seconds or so to raise their hands. Thank you. Okay, our first question comes from Greg Johnson. Greg, if you could unmute your line and please go ahead. Thank you.
Afternoon, thanks for your time. A couple of questions, please. Firstly, just thinking sort of the cruise lines looking to sort of reduce cost bases with a heavy focus on cost. Do you foresee any downward pressure on fees, passenger fees, as we move forward and the cruise industry opens? Secondly, with regards sort of future concessions, you talked in the statement around the prospects of Valencia and sort of with regards managing as opposed to investing. Is this a template, do you think, for future concessions going forward? And finally, just on sort of cash burn, a very strong performance in the first half. Do you foresee a position with commercial in the second half of getting to a cash flow neutral position in the next 6 months? Thank you.
Mehmet Bey, if you allow me, I'll take this first question and I'll give the second question to you about Valencia and that model. And then maybe Jan can answer the last question, if that's okay with you.
You second question, me third question, Jan.
All right. Well, the first question, will the cruise lines exert pressure on us to reduce passenger fees? I think I would be naive to say no. Of course they will. But the way this works is as they decrease the number of passengers in their ships, our fees decrease automatically. So, you know, this is what we will tell them and what we will show them. And beyond that, we are not thinking about giving discounts to cruise lines because it's also our livelihood and we do not intend to reduce fees in that way. But as I said, there will be certain reductions and certain increases as the passenger numbers fluctuate. So that would be my answer to the first question.
On the Valencia management, Greg, it all depends on the port. It's definitely not a template moving forward. The strategic importance of the port is very relevant. In the case of, for example, Cuba, we went for management. They didn't want it. I wish it was a concession. But Valencia is not that strategically relevant. It's a relatively small port right now, around, I think, 500,000 to 600,000. It's mostly a ferry operation. That's why we have Baleria as our partner, and they're good guys, very good guys. So it all depends on the destination. How long also is a very small port, time being. We rather not put cash in a port which is not that relevant. But for example, if we win one Alaska, we don't have a management. We don't. It's pure concession there. To answer your question, Jan, the third one.
Yes, on cash burn and positive cash flow generation. I think the second quarter is a template here, and as I said, we will have generated, despite all the circumstances, a positive EBITDA throughout that quarter, whereby the EBITDA generated in the commercial ports more than exceeds the EBITDA loss in the cruise portfolio. We did take further measures to reduce costs further. So the EBITDA loss will not extend, and every cruise call we get is a positive contribution margin, because every cruise call we would reactivate our subcontractors, which we have been working with throughout this crisis. So there's no problem of any ramp up cost to restart operations. So yes, and with a resilient performance, which is based on strong indicators expected to increase further on the commercial portfolio, I do not expect any negative cash generation across the group. What we will obviously not be able to repeat quite clearly is the reduction in receivables. Right, I mean that would obviously not be the working capital effect. Cannot be repeated across future quarters, but it nevertheless will not lead to negative cash flow, negative operating cash flow.
Just perfect, thank you.
On what Jan said, as I guess the co-founder, I have a very simple formula. Make sure you survive more than the cruise lines. And so far we're there. So the rest is, eventually the industry will open. I just got a message from Florida, as a matter of fact, with a discussion in a conversation, and it basically says that the Healthy Sail Panel, which is a panel established by Royal, MSC, and Norwegian, Carnival is not part of it, which is led by Scott Gottlieb and Governor Lovett, are expected to present a draft protocol to the cruise lines by 1st of September with a deadline of 21st for responses. The final documents will then be issued to the CDC. So all going well, I think the industry will open firstly by 3 7-day cruises in the Americas, probably by December, and eventually they'll go to full sailing with 70% capacity for the winter months of 2021 and back to their normal capacity by, I would say, last quarter of 2021, with the assumption that the herd immunity through vaccine is there. Sorry, Jan.
Okay, thank you. Next question comes from Owen Reid. Just a reminder, if you don't know how to raise your hand, if you press the participants icon at probably the bottom of your Zoom screen, that should allow you to open up a box on the right-hand side and you can raise your hand from there. Owen Reid, you're up next. Please unmute your line and go ahead. Thank you.
Martin, there was a gentleman also called Samuel Siboni who's been raising his hand first. So after Egon, let's go to him as well.
No problems.
Yeah, hi guys. Sorry, thanks for that. I guess I have four questions, if that's all right. Firstly, maybe focusing on the cruise division. I guess you kind of mentioned it there, but obviously capacity will be reduced on ships, which directs your sort of your revenue model. It'll obviously be lower, but are there opportunities for you to sort of make more money through some of the things you talked about, whether it's temperature checking, quarantine services or anything like that? And then my other question on the cruise division is, with your Nassau investment, given that the cruise industry is ground to a halt, does that mean that you might be able to complete your CapEx project sooner rather than expected? And therefore, will that impact the IRRs in terms of, you know, more cash up front, but ability to earn revenues and enhance EBITDA sooner? I'll leave you those two questions, and then I've got a couple on commercial after that.
Okay, I'll take the Nassau one.
Okay. And you I'll answer the first one, if that's okay.
On the Nassau, that's a very good point, because the way the tariff is set, and maybe Orjan, correct me if I'm wrong, we were going gradually to 8.5.
Mm-hmm.
So, and right. 8.5 per passenger kicks in only when the port is completed. Right now, unfortunately, we are not ahead of schedule. We, as a matter of fact, 42 days behind schedule. But when talking to our construction company, they hope to finish it ahead of schedule. The reason we are behind schedule is the country locked down. We couldn't get in. The construction people couldn't get in. But most probably we'll be able, we are set to complete construction by April 2022, maybe 2 to 3 months before that, pushing it very hard will be. So yes, to your question, you're right. The sooner you finish, we finish, the higher the margins, the EBITDA and the revenue will be.
And to answer your first question again, yes, the capacity reduction is how this whole thing will start, because cruise lines are taking down the maximum number of passengers that can board the ship for safety measures. For example, the first MSC ship coming to our port was sailing with maximum 70% occupancy. And within that, of course, numbers will fluctuate depending. Can we make money off of health services? Well, yes and no. Just like in security services, part of this will be mandatory, and it will be part of the common service that we provide to cruise lines. But we will also provide extra measures. And this can range in many ways, and my team is working on it right now. It could be sanitizing the tour buses, from anything from sanitizing the tour buses to evacuating infected passengers with helicopters, ambulance services, all sorts of things. So we will create some additional health and safety measures and services, but some of it will be part of what we provide to everyone.
Okay, that makes sense. And then just, I have two questions on the commercial division, which hopefully is straightforward, but I guess you're thinking why H2 is better than H1. It'd be interesting to hear what you're seeing. Is there specific projects coming through, or it's just continued improvement in volumes? And then on the Antalya sale, is there any further color you can give? Because I think the last time we had an update, the expectation was it to be completed during the summer period, and it sounds like it's pushed back a couple of months now. Is the buyer being sort of slow in coming to an agreement, and are they trying to sort of push you up your Eurobond deadline, or is there sort of finer details that you're just ironing out? So some color there would be helpful.
Thank you. I'll start again, and mm-hmm. Maybe ask for some help from Jan. On Antalya first half, second half. And then for Antalya sale, Mehmet Bey, I think you would want to probably chip in here, right? So why do we think that the second half in Antalya might be better? Well, that basically has to do with the fact that the marble volumes are picking up, and that has to do with economy in China. The economy in China is starting to come back, and there has been some good signs on the marble side. And given that the other products pick up as well, the container, which is the main driver of the business in Antalya, will look better in the second half. And that's our plan. There's also the possibility that the steel business in Adria, which is somewhat sporadic, recording some volumes and some revenues. If you remember, that steel factory in Serbia was bought by the Chinese. And again, for the same reason, we expect the steel imports to China to be activated. And that will drive our revenues up by a lot if the steel business becomes activated in the second half in Adria.
Okay. Can I just check, sorry, the marble comments there. Is the expectation for marble to still be down year on year, marble volumes in H2 versus H2 previously? Or is there an assumption of normality?
I thought you were going to ask that. So that's why I said I will ask for Jan's help here. So Jan, can you enlighten us here?
Sure. Just to add on to what you said, this is not just on marble volume specifically. It is not just expectation, but it's also reality that Q2 numbers, although overall TEUs have remained stable in port of product and is at around 31,000 across both quarters. Within those numbers, the marble volumes have performed stronger, offset by weakness and other in other TU categories. So we're only seeing it in the second quarter emerging. The real, I think we would still see a lower, but yet a decline compared to last year in terms of TU volumes. However, that will substantially reduce the gap. We expect to reduce the gap also because the period to compare, we compare ourselves to in the second half had already been affected last year by a slowdown in demand around the US-China trade wars and change in the structures or the growth rates China has produced last year already. So all of that combined, but we're more prudent at this juncture, and we're looking at this more on a quarter-to-quarter evolution as opposed to last year.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Going back to the sale process of Antalya, I think that was a question. I didn't hear the question well. The process is still going on with the Middle Eastern buyer. We are at the final stages, but again, there can't be any guarantee, mostly because of some, I guess, condition precedents, which are difficult to achieve. But they are very, very eager. There's no doubt about it. The process is going on, basically. We'll know probably the results in the next, I would say, around 2 weeks. Is that fair?
I think experience has shown that timing was uncertain. So I think we will, yeah, I think timing remains uncertain. We will, of course, update everybody as soon as possible. But it is still something we need to go through. Process continues as Mehmet said, and we will. No final conclusion has been reached yet.
One thing, it makes a lot of sense for them for various reasons. Things happening within the Mediterranean. That I would add. So, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Owen. And next question comes from Samuel Sipani. Samuel, please unmute your line and go ahead. Thank you.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for your time. Just a quick question on the new bond you raised for the construction. Can you just repeat the details of that bond and whether it's included with, I know it's a non-recourse debt, but is it included in your net debt? And does it affect your covenants, your bond covenants? And where do you stand with regards to your bond covenants?
Yeah.
Thanks for the question. Thanks for the opportunity to talk more about the Nassau cruise port bond. It is the maturity is 20 years, so final maturity will be June 2040, and the interest it will be an interest only for the first 10 years of the lifetime, paid semi-annually at 8%. Bond has been issued at par. So the yield equally is 8%, and we will then repay that bond starting 2031 in 10 equal annual installments all the way down to final maturity, June 2040. It is an unsecured bond. No collateral or security is provided, not from Nassau Cruise Port, nor from any other group entity, GPH group entity. And it was successfully placed even with demand exceeding expectations, so that it was upsized from a target number of 130 million to eventually 150 in the process of the book building. Institutional investors only, by regulation, it wasn't open for retail investors. And it is a bond where which has the opportunity, we have the opportunity to tap it again, like you would expect from a bond. So it's non-recourse. It is not hence impacting the Eurobond covenant calculation structurally as well, because it's been issued by Nassau Cruise Port, a subsidiary of GPH PLC. So it's a sister company, not a subsidiary of the bond issuer Global Lehman. And as I said, it was all but 25 million have been raised up front. So just to reconcile for readers of our financial statement, you will see the amount of bond outstanding at the time of reporting was 125 million. Firm subscriptions though have been received for 150, but to minimize the negative carry, we have agreed with certain investors a delayed draw features throughout the remainder of this year to collect the outstanding 25 million, so that we will go to 150 million total outstanding bond by year end.
Thank you. And in terms of covenant issues you may have on the bond?
The bond has a covenant with respect to distributions, which is a 1.3 historical DSCR ratio, which needs to be satisfied prior to distributing any dividends. And it is, apologies, I just see here you asked also about consolidation. It is fully consolidated in GPH's financials, but please note that the ownership, equity ownership of GPH PLC and Nassau Cruise Port is 49%, but it is nevertheless a controlled entity, hence consolidated. So you will see a correction of that through minority interests, but the entirety of EBITDA and indebtedness is consolidated in PLC's statement.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Konstantin. Konstantin, please unmute your line and go ahead. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Martin. Hi, guys. So my first question is about the cash balance. So you've got on the consolidated level, I think 122 million. If you could confirm the split of that cash balance between effectively Glyco, sort of Nassau silo, and then, you know, cruise operations.
Sure, Konstantin. We do not at these at the half year financials disclose the details of the cash holdings per entity. But just to give you, I think it's pretty easy also to reconcile. We have at Nassau bulk of that cash sits at the Nassau entity. You've seen in our financial statement about across this half year about 30 million of total capex and development cost has been incurred in at Nassau Cruise Port, and the bond was issued at as I said currently outstanding nominal 125 million. Further development expenses, design expenses have been made, so that that leaves you a substantial portion of the cash at Nassau Cruise Port. Remainder is within the perimeter of GPH Global Lehman and GPH PLC. But of course, with various, we as reported before, without going into details, we have sufficient cash balances at the respective entities, OPCO entities, which bear OPCO debt to service the debt going forward, and equally sufficient cash flow at and cash levels within the global Liman group, the Turkish group, for upcoming payments and the cash burn there.
Got it. And then on sort of global Liman cash, I guess given that the incurrence covenant is in breach now, you can't move cash from Glyco silo to Holdco. Is it fair to say?
That's the consequence of the incurrence covenant, correct? Correct.
Got it. And then when we think about Glyco cash, could you give us a split between conceptually like Turkish lira, dollars, and maybe if you could comment on in which banks that cash sits in Turkey?
I don't even have the numbers in front of me to tell you that Turkish lira holdings will be minimal at any point in time. We have a cent.
I can tell you that they are close to zero.
Yes, exactly. So we have only convert the hard currency. Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, please.
No, I was just explaining the background of that. As an entity in Turkey, it may be surprising. So we have all revenues in
banks held, if I'm not wrong. It's mostly BBVA.
So it's correct. BBVA Turkey, right?
Yes, BBVA Group in Turkey, BBVA Guarantee, correct.
Got it. And then finally, sort of on new ports capex. So obviously, that's a substantial cash outflow. So when we think about the next 12 months, what kind of capex we should expect? And presumably, that's mostly in Nassau, and it's going to be funded by that cash silo. But if you could give us a sense on the cash capex outflow for the next 12 months.
Yes, we have been, let me start, you asked for the Nassau, you're right, this is the biggest part, let me nevertheless start. I do, I will, yes. The Antigua, let me start with the Antigua CapEx. We have almost completed the new pier construction. It is expected to be completed in the fourth quarter 2020 this year. As of the reporting date, end of June, 9 million was outstanding, which is 8 to 9 million, which is fully funded with the remaining facility, the facility at Antigua level. Nassau, we have currently, as reported, the marine component is contracted and underway, which will carry us well into 2021. That marine component is fully funded by the bond. Total capex there would be in the region of 100 to 110 million. So another 70, 80 to go under this. And then in 2021, we'll look into completing both the landside development and any remaining financing if needed for the project.
Got it. And then finally, is it fair to say that the cash proceeds from the new bond can be used only for the capex purposes? So you can't use it to, let's say, fund operational cash burn elsewhere in the group?
It is a bond issued by Nassau Cruiseport, and it will be used at for the investment in Nassau.
Got it. Okay, thanks very much for the call, and good luck. All the best.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Motion. Motion, please unmute your line and go ahead. Thank you.
Hey guys, thank you very much for taking my call. Just three questions for you. Just on that, just jumping on that last cash question. So if I were to just follow what you guys had guided to, the total cash balance that's reported at the end of 2Q is 122. So I'm just trying to figure out like how much cash is then left outside of Nassau. If 125 was raised at Nassau so far, and 30 has been used at Nassau. That means 90 of that cash or so is still at Nassau, which leaves 32-ish at GPH and below. Is that roughly the right number?
Yes, of course, yeah. Correct. We also, okay. Nassau Cruise Port, just to also add on, Nassau, had you seen this in our financial statement, maybe just a slight correction of those statements, had an outstanding debt as well as of year end. So that was refinanced. It was a bridge loan where we financed initial development phases. So that was financed right now. The only outstanding liability in Nassau is the bond. But still, broadly, you're correct.
So then just the burn in cash from 1Q to 2Q, is that entirely explained by the coupon? Because the coupon, I think, or the interest payment was only like 14, 15 million. So, and the cash balance at the end of 1Q before the NASA bond was 56 million. So that should have gotten you into the low 40s. Was there any additional CapEx or any other cash outflow in GPH and below that might explain that cash burn?
No, you're right. The bond, the bond payment and other payments, but predominantly it is the Eurobond payment, is due in May and November each year. So the net interest expense of 14, 15 million reported during this quarter is heavily geared towards and within the second quarter. So that would be the main driver of the balance. The CapEx projects, as I said, from a cash perspective, have been fully funded as well. In Nassau, as discussed, equally the CapEx expansion, CapEx projects in Antigua. So,
right. So just to add to that, the cash balance at the end of 1Q was 56. If I assume 15 million for interest expense, that should get me to 40. And we just confirmed that the actual cash balance at GPH and below is low 30. So that's another 8, 10 million delta. Just wondering where that came from.
That's young. Maybe you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but there were some principal payments on loans.
Correct.
From Barcelona to other ports.
Understood. Okay.
Yes. Correct. I was about to say that principal and interest payments would make up the remainder of the balance. Correct.
Understood. Okay. Then in just in Nassau. So I mean, this is obviously a joint venture with the local group called BIH, but have they put in their equity contribution for their 49% stake as of now?
Let me take this question, Jan, if you don't mind. So far, nobody put any equity yet. We're supposed to put equity. There's a strong probability that it will be fully debt financed. But if equity is needed, that will be probably second to third quarter next year.
So what is each of your contributions on the equity for in the second half of this year?
It's not second half of this year. I'm talking about second half or third half of 21.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
It'll be circa 10 to 15.
Understood. Okay, and then the last question is, there was some litigation also at Ag Dennis, and I think we talked about it in the last call, and I think I think the worst case outcome over there was a small amount, but just wanted to figure out if there was any update on that litigation.
And maybe do you want to answer that or?
Yeah, you're right. We are still thinking that we have a good chance of not getting any punishment out of this. But if we do, then the expectation is like around 3% of the yearly revenue.
Okay. I would just like to make it clear, we have discussed this last time. This percentage refers to the business unit which has been investigated, not the entire Port Agdenis revenue. Yeah. So it's a lower revenue. You can't multiply this with the full revenue. And yeah, it's an ongoing process investigation is ongoing, and the group's lawyers made the case accordingly with the competition authority, but the final decision on the case we discussed is not been reached yet.
Okay, understood. I'll jump back in queue. Thank you.
Thank you. Konstantin, you may have another question as your hand is still up. If you do, please unmute your line and go ahead.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up. So it sounds like 5 million of cash sits at Nassau level, and then the rest pretty much sits at Global Liman level. So I guess the question is, how do you guys think about sort of if cruise operations do not return, anytime soon, how are you going to fund the cash burn in sort of cruise silo?
Yeah, let me give you feedback. Yep. And actually, you should send to Constantine the cash burn and how long each port can survive, as well as Global Liman. But the overall, if I'm not wrong, we can survive 22 months starting today at OPCO level on average for everything, including Global Liman. But Jan, you want to be more specific?
No, I think that comes to the, that's the essence of the, that's a key of what you just said, right? We are looking at existing cash resources, looking at confirmed revenue we're running scenarios internally, which do not assume a return of any cruise activity to be on the safe side, none whatsoever, even though, as you just learned, first cruise calls are happening as we speak, and we expect further pickup of the activity. We do not expect, though, that cruise activity will remain suspended, completely suspended throughout this year and 2021. So we have prepared for the worst case. Should there any be further suspension beyond what is currently foreseeable, we would need to react accordingly. But at this juncture, and as it was explained in this call, we have substantial runway in terms of months of survivability, and we expect cruise activity to return well before that happens. That runway ends.
I think one need to note that when you look at the cruise lines' cash burn rates and their horizons, we are not talking about the end of 2021 there. That's the reason why Mehmet Bey said that at the beginning, that we just need to outlive the cruise lines. That's what he meant by that.
I mean, just to add, thank you, Emre Bey, for that reminder. Very good point. The mandate of the management, the mandate of given by the board to me and the management is to survive 9 to 12 months post the survival of the cruise lines, which puts us to close to 22 months as we speak.
Got it. So with the, just to be clear, so with the current cash on the balance sheet across all the silos, you're confident that, if the cruise does not come back in the next 22 months, you're not going to run out of cash. So you'll have sort of liquidity for that period of time.
That is correct, but there are exceptions. And Jan, you can talk about it. Operationally, that is absolutely correct.
Got it.
Okay. Anyone has any further questions, please raise your hand. Mohsin, please go ahead.
Hey guys, just big picture wise, and I guess this is for Mehmet. It sounds like the sale is in the last stages, but you never know what might happen. And if it doesn't work out as expected, I'm just trying to figure out what sort of alternative, options are you guys thinking of? Is like a CB an option? Is onshore loans an option?
That's a very, very good question. As I mentioned before, operational cash wise, we have no issue. The only issue we have is the Eurobond. For that, if that sale doesn't happen, I'm going to leave it to Jan what are the discussions he's having, because he's been put in charge by the board for this whole process. Jan?
No, we clearly acknowledge the importance, clearly acknowledge the need for refinancing, and we are working on this, as I explained in previous calls. And it's a key priority for us to effectively do that well ahead of the maturity 2021. As it was mentioned, it needs to be considered in the context of other strategic initiatives of the predominantly the asset sale, which hasn't been concluded yet. But it is something we very actively consider.
In case it doesn't happen, or we decide, you know, conditions are not acceptable, there are alternative scenarios that we are pursuing.
I guess at this stage, is there any more detail you can provide as to what those scenarios might entail, or?
Well, I'll leave it to Jan and Martin to comment. I get in trouble when I talk too much, so
it's okay then.
No, I would. We will update you when it's appropriate to do so. But yeah, I know what you want to hear. I know what you are looking for, and we will give you that information when we will give you the appropriate information in due course.
Understood. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you for doing a great job.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We were doing a great job until this COVID hit us, but that's like beyond our control. Thank you, Mosin.
Yep.
Okay. One final opportunity for anyone that hasn't asked a question or anyone that would like to ask another question, please use the raise your hand functionality. Okay. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. That ends the Q&A section of the call. I will now hand back to Mehmet or Emre to just finish off the call. Thank you.
I want to say one thing which I should have mentioned. It's my mistake. I'm on holiday. I would like to thank Ferdanım for his excellent tenure and to bring the company from nothing to where it is right now. And God help you, Jan, going forward with no revenue. And welcome on board.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, Mehmet Bey. Thank you very much, Ferda, for everything you have done
the
company from the beginning.
Yes.
We should also mention the fact that Jan has been actually actively running our corporate finance function up to now. So he's just stepping into, if you will, bigger shoes. And those shoes are, I think, hard to fill. So good luck, Jan. And we look forward to working with you. And we look forward to working with Ferda as the CFO of our number one and majority shareholder. So we'll be continuing to work together. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for all for your good wishes and good things. And we continue work together. And it's very pleasure working with you together with you. Thank you for your all support and all kindness. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. And that now concludes the call. If you have any further questions or follow-ups, then please just give me a phone or drop an email and we will get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you.